This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. But it's tough to find one that will last through the season. That's why the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime. So you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. Slate Magazine called it the greatest hoodie ever made. And from cotton to zipper, it's made right here in the USA. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, a double-lined hood, and reinforced elbow patches, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code CLASSIC24.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Well, have at it. Let it all out. College football playoff bracket is out. You've been waiting all weekend to talk about it. I want you to have at it. What did you make of the initial inaugural 12-team playoff bracket? What jumps out at you? What are you fascinated by? What are you infuriated by? Did the Ducks get a good or a bad draw in your mind? Did it work? Is it better than what we had before? But what could be better about it? I've been listening to some bellyaching in the last 24 hours. I want to hear what you think of it. 503-417-7575. You can line up now. Tell me what you make of the CFP. Rankings, data, the matchups. I was in Indianapolis for the Big Ten championship game. Oregon got pushed around a little bit by Penn State. Can we acknowledge that? I saw Tosh Lapoy, the Oregon defensive coordinator, on the field after the game. Shook his hand, congratulated him. I mean, after all, they went 13-0. But I was watching kind of Will Stein, the offensive coordinator. He was running around the field. He was super happy. He was hugging people. Dan Lanning, the Oregon coach, he got emotional on the field. He was talking with Phil Knight and hugging his mom and dad. And his kids were there and his wife was there. And Dan Lanning, as he walked by me, he had glassy eyes. He got emotional on the field in Indianapolis. I don't know how much of that came through in the TV and the post game, but It was a very emotional scene, but Tosh Lapoy, the D coordinator, was standing back from it at about the 35 or 40 yard line, if this was all going on around the 20. And he was with his family and he was talking to some people, and there were times where he was celebratory, but he wasn't in the jovial mood that everybody else was in. And I understand it. The defense gave up 292 rushing yards to Penn State, and this was an Oregon defense that had been pretty good against the run this season. It was a top 25 run defense going into the game, averaging at about 125 yards a game, giving up running the ball, and Penn State was just running outside zone and mid-outside zone, and they were just having a lot of success out there with their offensive line and two really good running backs. Is it the blueprint to beating Oregon? We'll find out. Are the Ducks going to win this thing? We'll also find out. They're going to have to wait a little bit to play. Oregon among the favorites. Oregon and Texas on the board as of this morning. 3.5-1 each are the two favorites to win the thing. I don't believe in Texas. And, I've seen enough of Texas in big games last year and this year. There's something missing with the Longhorns. I just don't believe in them. I think Georgia's good enough to win. I think Ohio State is good enough to win. I think Notre Dame is a pretty good value at 10-1. Notre Dame could win. Physically, those teams are all a little bit different. Penn State's got the run attack and is physical, but there's something missing at Penn State in the same way there's something missing at Texas, isn't there? Maybe it's James Franklin. Maybe it's Steve Sarkisian. But I don't really believe in the Longhorns. I don't believe Penn State can get through this thing. And like the college basketball tournament, we're going to hear so much about matchups. But I'm just looking at these teams in general. Arizona State, SMU, Indiana, Clemson, Boise State. Some interesting teams in there. And certainly those out there who are rooting for an outlier see outliers in that group. Arizona State, the uninvited guest, picked dead last in the Big 12. They're in it. And not only are they in it, they became the four seed. They'll get a first-round bye. SMU, formerly of the American Athletic Conference, first year in the ACC, in the big dance, so to speak. Is that what we're calling it? But they're a 40-1 shot to win it. Thought a little bit disappointing in the ACC title game, but it worked out for SMU because Clemson beating SMU gives the ACC an extra team in the playoff. And it effectively ended and resulted in Alabama getting knocked out. Alabama can be mad for a lot of reasons, but they should be mad most of all at SMU for losing to Clemson. I want your phone calls, 503-417-7575. Who's your pick to win it? How could we make this bracket better? Certainly nationally, there's a lot of belly aching. Greg Byrne, the athletic director at Alabama, he's out lobbying and upset that his team and his program has not risen to the point where it can matter. I think there's a bunch to talk about, and I want to get right to the phone lines. Let's go right out there. Roy in Portland's going to lead us off. Roy, welcome to the conversation. Can you punch him up on line five, Stephen? Thank you.
Hello?
Go ahead, Roy.
Hello, John.
Yeah, you're on.
You know, John, they tried to take it from us, man. They tried to tell us that Texas was going to beat us. They tried to tell us that, you know, we wasn't good this year. They tried to tell us we wasn't making it. And at the end of the day, who was the SEC champion? Georgia. Nobody is better than the SEC. Alabama, hey, go home and cry. You know, you didn't make it. Your whole Super Bowl was beating us. That was your season. Once you beat us, then, you know, you thought you won the national championship. Same thing with Ole Miss. But at the end of the day, Texas getting an easy schedule. At the end of the day, we're the champions again. But just like this season is up and down, you know, for Georgia, as I'm celebrating, then I see my quarterback with his arm dangling.
Yep.
My starting quarterback. Then we get our backup quarterback to almost get his head knocked off. So, I mean, I don't know. We may not have a quarterback going into the into the playoffs. So hopefully we get enough time. Maybe Beck will come back. I don't know. But that concerns me. But yeah, they didn't do Oregon any favors. To quote Mark from Portland, if Oregon is going to win it, they're going to have to win it on the field. Did he say that about Georgia? Huh? Now you got to possibly play Texas. You got to play the winner of Ohio State and Tennessee. And, you know, it's looking pretty good on our side, John. With Georgia, our little pod over there, we got Boise State and we got Notre Dame and Indiana.
Wait a minute. You're not worried about Boise State, are you?
No, I'm not worried about Boise State. I'm not worried about SMU. I'm not worried about anybody. Listen, I'm not worried about anybody in our pod because we could beat every single team in that pod. So thank you, committee, you know, for giving us that.
Roy, go ahead.
John, I want to say one more thing, man. And this might ruffle some Oregon people, you know, it might ruffle some feathers, man, but when I hear Phil Knight is personally calling players and telling them he's going to give them their own exclusive shoe deal and their own Nike contract, John, that's unfair. Because I was told Phil Knight has nothing to do with Nike anymore. I was told he was just giving money out of his pocket. But the fact that he's calling recruits, and what makes it bad to me is because Nike is the provider of like 90% of apparel and equipment for college football teams. So how is, like, Georgia's a Nike school. So how is Phil Knight offering recruits to get them to come to Oregon exclusive shoe deals that other Nike schools can't do? I mean, to me, that's fair. Unfair, I mean, you know. And this revenue sharing, $20 million, supposed to crack down on, like, NIL deals. You know, like crazy NIL deals, like at least that's what I'm reading. But to me, that's not fair, man, because I'm wondering, like, how is out. I know, I mean, you know, you've been recruiting good, but I'm looking at the recruiting and you're getting all these players from the South, and I'm like, okay, what's going on? And then the kid, he let the cat out the bag. He said, well, the only reason I came is because Phil Knight personally called me and said he was going to send my own shoe. And I'm going up to Oregon to start working on my shoe. I'm sorry, John, but to me, that's not right. That's an unfair advantage, you know, unfair competition, especially when you have other Nike schools that can't offer, like Georgia. We can't offer exclusive Nike, even though we're a Nike school. We can't offer an exclusive Nike deal to a player. We want to...
The playing field's on level, isn't it?
No.
The playing field... Yeah, you're there. The playing field's not level, is it?
No, it's not level if you got the founder of Nike as your...
How do you think the Mountain West Conference feels? Like, they're getting $1.8 million in playoff distributions, and Georgia is, Georgia and everybody else in the SEC is getting $15 million. Now, welcome to their world, Roy.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, but my problem is 90% of the schools are Nike schools, and Oregon, and Phil Knight, the founder of Nike,
breaking up
your own personal shoes.
I get what you're saying. It's not available to Georgia, but it's an NIL deal. It's not outside the scope of the rules. You've got business owners in Miami and Columbus, Ohio, doing similar things. It just happens to be that it's Nike. And if we're being real, the irony is that it's happening to an SEC school. If we're being real, that's the real thing. Let's go to Mark in Portland. Mark, go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, I've never thought I'd root for Notre Dame to advance in this tournament, because I mean Roy's right about one thing. He's crying about Nike, but the committee, it's almost like they set up the seeding. I mean, Oregon on the bracket on the side they're on, there's no doubt now that I'd rather be a 5 or a 6 seed. The 5 seed, Texas, the reason they're the same favorite as Oregon is, despite playing another game, because they're really just kind of playing some warm-up games, John. They're going to handle Clemson, and, you know, they're probably going to be way too much for Arizona State. I mean, you got to go with what you got, but it doesn't reward you for – Oregon's the only team in the country. Not only did they go 13-0, I believe Boise State's the only one-loss team. So everybody else lost two games in the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, and Oregon was undefeated, and they got no reward for that. So that's number one. And you have to be honest, in the Big 10 championship, they ran the football on us at will. They really physically manhandled us. Defense on our defense got manhandled. So
292 yards.
Yeah, we're on the wrong side of the bracket for that, because all the teams we're playing are going to be similar to Penn State as far as physicality at the point of attack on the line of scrimmage. So I'm filling out my bracket, you know, trying to make some money. I don't have Oregon going all the way. I really don't after watching that game. I'm probably going to pencil them out in the semifinals or so. That's an impossible road almost for anybody with the parity we have in college football now. So, but you know what, John? It's still way better than being left out in 2001, Joey Harrington's senior year, or 2012, Marcus Mariota's redshirt freshman year. At least we have a chance to settle it on the field. As hard as the brackets is for us, you just take it one game at a time. And, you know, if they win that first game, I'll feel a lot better about playing Texas. I think Ohio State's the team that actually scares me, to be the revenge factor and having to replay that game again. So, it's going to be a tough tournament for Oregon on the side there.
Sure.
It's a joke when you look at the brackets.
The other thing, Mark, the thing that I came away with is in the NFL playoffs, you get advantages for being the team with the best record. You get home games. You get a bye, you get a distinct advantage. The top four seeds, the conference champions, the four highest-rated conference champions all got byes. We can debate whether or not having to be off for 24 days is good or bad. Like, there's a rust element there. But then after that, once they get to the Rose Bowl round, the advantage is lost. Like, it's not a home game. You didn't get a favorable draw. You didn't, you know, it, and so I think they have to look back at that maybe a little bit as they try to improve this thing in future years.
Yeah, I think they should go to 16 teams, John. That would make this a lot easier to seed it. So Oregon's playing the 16 seed, and Arizona State and Boise State do not deserve byes, so that has to be corrected. They they shouldn't be, you know, being given a favorable situation over teams like Texas and,
right,
you know, Penn State, Ohio State even. I mean,
yeah, they're just, you're hitting on it. I mean, thanks for the call, Mark. I appreciate it. And there's a distinct something going on with the seeding that probably needs to be looked at, because, you know, Oregon goes 13-0. They're the number one seed in this bracket. And Georgia is the 2 seed because they're the SEC champion. But when you look over at the actual rankings, okay, Ohio State has got the 8 seed. But the actual rankings, Ohio State's the 6th best team in the eyes of the committee. So the number one seed will be playing the team that is presumably the 6th best team in its opening round game. And that's fine. But when you look at what Boise State and Georgia and Arizona State potentially are playing, it doesn't make sense that the one seed would have, you know, the next team. I think what they should do is, after the opening round, they should go, okay, now we are adjusting to regular seeds, and the one seed plays the lowest ranked team. Because Oregon got a pretty tough draw. Oregon's going to have to beat, let's just say the seeds hold up, okay, all through the tournament. Oregon's going to have to beat Ohio State, and then it's going to have to beat Texas, because they were the next highest ranked team, because Texas would presumably beat Arizona State, even though Arizona State's a higher seed. Texas was higher in the rankings. And then it would be Georgia. For the national championship, Oregon's going to have to beat Ohio State, Texas, and Georgia to get to the national title. Georgia would presumably have to beat Notre Dame and Boise State and Oregon. A little bit different. Still not a cakewalk, but a little bit different. Boise State would have to beat Penn State, Georgia, and Oregon. Still different. And then finally, Arizona State, if it gets there, it's going to have to beat Texas, Oregon, and Georgia. So I think the top half of that bracket with Oregon and Arizona State, the 1 seed and the 4 seed, they've got it a lot tougher. Let's go to Cam and Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Go ahead, Cam.
So the SEC wants to tell us all about strength and strength of schedule, and wants us to be impressed by it and put all their teams in the tournament. The one thing that I don't understand about that argument is it begins with the preseason rankings, the rankings that come from nowhere. The SEC gets the most ranked teams, and they get the highest rankings year in and year out as a conference, and they have the least risk of that going away because they play one less conference game than everybody else, which inflates their win totals, and then they bring in an extra cupcake in November when everybody is tired and weary and upsets are likely to occur, and they do all of that. And then look back at the end of the year at the rankings, which began with, you know, just an eyeball test and basically predictions, and they demand to get in. But we saw this year, that's not what's, you know, the perception is not reality. Congratulations, Georgia, you won your SEC title, but you narrowly got by a Big 12 team to do that. And the Big 12 won by a Pac-12 team. And the Big 10 won by a Pac-12 team. And so on and so forth. And so I'm not going to sit here and say that the current model is perfect, because it's not. They need to reseed it after the first round. They'll get there. They'll fix it. But before you attack the process in the selection committee that protects the conference champions, remember that the SEC wants 5 or 6 teams in the tournament, and they want 3 or 4 of the byes, and that's where they're going with it. This model protects us against that, and I hope we maintain it. It seems funny to me that the SEC's solution to everything is that nobody should have a conference championship game now, because if you don't have a conference champion, you can't say that that conference champion is better than the SEC's at-large team.
The other thing is
I'm glad Alabama's not going.
Alabama's crying and saying, we shouldn't play anybody anymore. And I love Petros Papadakis, the FS1 broadcaster, who tweeted, "Didn't you just play Mercer?" So there you go. Let's go to Chris, who's in West Lynn. Chris, what's up?
Hey, John, just want to say congratulations to Oregon to winning the Big Ten title. You know, I'm a longtime Duck fan, and, you know, the teams they beat this year, you know, from Boise State, Washington, Michigan, Penn State, and, you know, Penn State was a lot harder than we thought, and Ohio State. It's just, You know, I don't know. And I listen to my phone. I'm coming up from Salem, and I listen to Roy, and it's just like, really? I mean, Phil Knight is the one who, yeah, he's out of Oregon. And Georgia, you know, gets plenty of perks. And if he's calling players to do a shoe deal, then that's what's going on. I mean, that's the way the land of the law is going. But I'm ready for Oregon to play anybody. I know there was a little question, but I think each game they come in prepared. And I wouldn't be surprised to see ASU give Texas a heck of a game. So,
yeah,
you know, it's I just think this new schedule is great. And, you know, just listen to your broadcast and hearing people talk. But I seem to hear Roy come on there and talk about his Georgia all the time. So,
well, he loves Georgia, but I think it is kind of funny.
He loves Georgia. Yeah.
I think it is kind of funny to hear the SEC fans in a disadvantaged position going, hey, this isn't fair. And I'm going, hey, now you know how the rest of college football feels. Yeah, it's not fair. It's not fair that the SEC teams have a media deal that pays them $20 million more a year than most of the other conferences. It's not fair that you know, Washington State and Oregon State are getting $3.6 million a year from the CFP distributions, and the SEC teams are getting $20 million. It's not fair that 29% of the revenue from the college football playoff will go to the SEC and only 15% will go to the Big 12. It's not fair at all. But I get the point. You know, I think it's good when you see a competitive disadvantage to point at it. And, you know, and maybe there should be some rules in place for everything. Sean's in Vancouver. Sean, what do you got?
Hey, John. Hope you and your family are good. So, yeah, I'm a Georgia Bulldog fan, too. And I'm not at all unhappy about where we ended up. That's a pretty good place. And I feel sorry for Oregon because Ohio State will come looking for revenge, and Tennessee does everything Penn State did, but better. And they can't – I'm not sure Oregon's going to have a tough out. I mean, they're going to earn it, just like you said earlier.
Right.
And Roy needs to remember that we don't get – Nike money, but we get all the Coca-Cola money and peaches that we want.
Lots of peaches, that's for sure.
Lots of peaches.
You're not kidding about that. They got buckets of peaches. I want more phone calls. 503-417-7575. Keep it coming.
Hey, how do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Football playoff causing a lot of belly aching. The bracket's out. The odds are out. We'll get our Heisman finalists here coming up. Joel Klatt talking about Oregon's draw.
Congratulations, Dan Lanning and the Oregon Ducks. You got absolutely screwed by the playoff committee because their sentiment of trying to create artificial floors rose some of these teams to the levels where they shouldn't be. That's the problem for going 13-0. And having the best regular season in all of college football, which is supposed to be the most valuable regular season in all of sports, the reward for that is having to play the three highest odds team to win the national championship. They're going to have to go through possibly Ohio State, Texas, and Georgia to win the national championship. So now it's not a true meritocracy. Now it's not a true playoff. It's not a true bracket. You set out to do something like value the conference championship game. And in doing so, you devalued the conference championship game.
Well, if you look at Oregon's path, it's true that as the 5 seed, had they lost on Saturday to Penn State, they might have been in a better position. As a 5 seed, they would have drawn Clemson in the opening round. Then likely a date against Arizona State in the Peach Bowl. And instead, they're going to wait, get a week off, or game off, I should say. Then it's Ohio State, then probably Texas, then maybe Georgia, or whoever comes out of that other bracket. On one hand, unfair. On the other hand, Dan Lanning's going to rally around this. He's going to put Oregon, the number one seed and undefeated Big Ten champion, in a position of saying it's us against the world, chip on the shoulder, look what they did to us. Tell me what you see when you see the bracket. Let's go to Justin, who is in Central Oregon, listening in Bend. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, John, I've got two parts of that. I undoubtedly believe that we have the hardest path. I don't think anybody's going to question that. But at the same time, I've got a lot of my buddies that like to harass me a little bit and say that we didn't really play anybody outside of Ohio State. And when we did play Ohio State, we barely squeaked by, and they've gone on and lost two more games after that. Well, one more game after that. And, it discredits us even a little bit more. But with this tougher path to the national championship, there's not going to be anybody that can say that we didn't earn it when we do fight through this bracket and win the hardest path.
Yeah. There's going to be no doubt. I mean, if Oregon wins the thing, there will be no doubt. But I think if you had it your way, you probably would say, hey, they deserve something for this. Ross Dellinger, Yahoo Sports, says he thinks that the reason why Oregon is getting hosed here is because the playoff was made and constructed for a Power 5, not a Power 4. What does he mean by that?
So the seeding is kind of off. And while I do agree with you, I think the format's pretty cool. It puts a lot of value on conference champions and championships, what they wanted. However, this format was created when we had five power conferences, not four. We have four now. Not only do we have four, Jim, but we have four that are pretty unequal, right? And so this format was created for a power five, not a power four. So it'll be interesting going forward what tweaks may come of it.
I think he's overcomplicating it. I just think there's seeding, okay, and then there's ranking. And so this is how a Clemson team that would be nowhere near this 12-team bracket, if you just rank the teams, Clemson gets in as the 12 seed because they win the ACC championship. They're not an at-large team. They are a conference champion. That's why Clemson's in. They are the number five highest-rated conference champion. And so Clemson gets in for that reason. But Clemson doesn't disrupt anybody. The disruptors are Boise State and Arizona State because they're both conference champions, and they are ranked below their seeding. So Boise State is the 9 highest-ranked team, but they're the 3 seed. And Arizona State is number 12 on the rankings, but number 4 in the bracket. And so because you have two teams that are seeded above their ranking, somebody's going to be basically underseeded. And the underseeded teams, in particular, it's Ohio State at 8 because they would be number 6 in a normal bracket. And then, you kind of look at that and you go, okay, wait a minute, what happened there? And then probably Notre Dame dropping to a 7. So, those are the toughest draws. And so Ohio State shouldn't be anywhere near the 8 seed. They should be over in that other bracket, maybe playing SMU or playing Indiana in the opening round. And instead, they're in lying in wait for Oregon. Let's go to the phone lines. Go back out to the lines. Gary's in Tualatin. Gary's a big Duck fan. Gary, congrats on your conference championship, but now you got your work cut out for you.
Go Big Ten champion Ducks. Nobody can take that away from us. To me, it was the greatest game as a Duck fan. I mean, it had everything. And if you were just to set the two teams side by side, they may have been the better team. They were certainly equal to us. They played way better than I thought they would. But on the field, it comes down to one or two plays, and that 4th and 9 that Gabriel threw to Fergie, I mean, that was really the game versus them going for 2, which was insane. And then they run the double reverse, putting the ball up at the end and throwing the interception when I know it was desperation time, but those were the two differences in the two games, and that's why you have the game being won on the field, not in some, you know, back room where everybody supposedly knows who's better than who. The only thing we know is that there's four or five champions that actually won the game on the field, and everything else is fluff. It's just basically a beauty pageant. And so what if they say this route's easier, that route's easier? Hey, they got to go through us, and they got to beat us in the Rose Bowl. And we're a pretty doggone good team. So I'm not upset with it at all. If you want to be the best, you got to beat the best.
Well, that's a great point, that you're going to have to play them anyway at some point. But I think, you know, if you had given the top four rated conference champions the option of drafting who they would play, would you want the winner of Ohio State, Tennessee? Would you want the winner of Texas, Clemson? Would you want the winner of SMU, Penn State, or would you want the winner of Notre Dame, Indiana, if you were Oregon? What if the one seed got to pick? All right, we get to pick which bracket lines up with us. I don't think they would pick Ohio State, Tennessee. Let's go to Rob, who's in Salem. Phone line, we got one line open at 417-7575. Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, John. I guess I'm not the only one that realizes that Oregon is the best team in the country. And we want to play all the best teams in the country. You know, an easy way forward, yeah, that'd be nice, but we want to prove it, you know? And like you said, is the SEC really that good? I know that if Oregon played Ohio State again, we left so many points out there on the board, we could beat them again. If we play Tennessee, yeah, it's going to be a great game, and hopefully we will beat an SEC team. And then if we play Texas, hopefully we'll beat another SEC team. And then hopefully we'll play Georgia. Like, this year could be our year, and that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Well, it did feel to me on Saturday, as I saw Phil Knight in the post game, and you watched the game that I watched, and it felt like it was Oregon's year. And I left the stadium at 3 a.m., by the way, and I left the stadium going, Oregon's going to win this thing. This is Oregon's year. They've got the players. They've got the coaching. They have proven they can beat anybody that lines up against them this season. They're the only team in the country that didn't face plant in any given moment. Just the consistency with which Oregon played, the depth that Oregon has. They have elite depth. They have elite playmakers. They've got a quarterback. It's just all there for them. If they play a clean game, I think they can beat Ohio State again. If they play a clean game, I think they can beat the winner of Arizona State and Texas or Clemson. If they play a clean game, I think they can beat Georgia. So it really does, to me, come down to Oregon being able to find its best three games. I have questions about the 24-day layoff. I see the value of it, the rest, getting healthy, letting other teams hash it out, but you know, the rust factor, it could be a factor for those top four seeds. We shall see. I think the biggest beneficiary to having the layoff will be Boise State, because Ashton Jeanty having 3+ weeks to just get healthy and get his arm, his forearm, whatever's going on with his arm, get it right. I think that is a big advantage for Boise State, but we shall see how this unfolds. Nick Saban pointing out that he doesn't think athletic directors will look for tougher schedules after this playoff committee sort of lined up that, hey, going undefeated, playing weaker opponents isn't a bad thing.
Well, I think one of the things that I've mentioned, you know, throughout this football season is if we don't take strength of schedule into consideration, is there any benefit to scheduling really good teams in the future? Like, you know, here at Alabama, we're supposed to play Notre Dame, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Florida State in the future outside the league. Well, those are great games for fans to see, and that's what I think we should be doing. You know, in college football is creating more good inventory for great games that people are interested in. But do you enhance people wanting to do that, where what's the athletic director going to do. He may go cancel all those games now, knowing that the SEC is tough enough.
Yeah, Nick Saban thinks they might schedule softer. I'm not as worried about that because I want a bigger sample size. I think a lot of conclusions are going to be drawn off this one tournament. The other thing is these college football schedules are done 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years in advance. I don't think you're going to see like wholesale scheduling philosophy moves manifest themselves in the next 1 or 2 years. And then I also think television, ESPN and ABC and Fox play a role in this because they have been willing to pay for these crossover non-conference matchup games. They paid Oregon $4 million a couple seasons ago, 3 seasons ago to play Georgia. They've been willing to pay for these games. I don't think the schools are going to shy away if they're getting $4 million to go play a football game. But, you know, it, also the SEC programs are playing 8 conference games while everybody else is playing 9. So, you know, there's that too. If Georgia and Alabama and others want to start playing 9 games, then I'll start worrying more about that. Steven, what'd you think when the bracket came out?
Well, first of all, I do want to say this about Nick Saban complaining about Alabama. They played Mercer and Western Kentucky and South Florida and Wisconsin. It's not like their non-conference was brutal. So let's just stop with the old, we need to face it. Easier non-conference. Just beat Oklahoma and Vanderbilt, you're in the playoff. Too easy. My takeaway was, it seems like the Ducks got a rough route on that one with the one seed having to face Ohio State or Tennessee compared to a team like Texas or Penn State, where they're going to go against Clemson and Boise State and SMU and Arizona State. So seems like it's going to be tough, but I, at the same time, you know what? It's like kind of what the college is saying. If you want to be the champ, you got to beat the best teams. So Oregon has no, if Oregon wins the championship, no one can say they didn't deserve it because they have beaten every single good team that'll be out there in college football. But I feel like this whole bracket, it was set up now where the SEC is going to complain about it and they're going to either wield their power of, well, we're not going to do this because you're not giving our teams the benefit of the doubt, or they're going to absolutely just expand it to 16, 24 teams, whatever it is, just to get more and more SEC schools in this bracket. Also, good for the ACC to have SMU come back in that game because they were getting blown out, ran off the field by Clemson. They had a nice comeback. I think that really saved them to lose on a game-winning field goal when they were down by 20 points or whatever it was in the first half. If that game ends with a 20-point win by Clemson, SMU's not getting in. Alabama's getting in that situation. So great job, I think, by SMU to save their season by playing a great second half of football. I will say, though, John, I'm excited to see these matchups. Like, I've been looking at the bracket, and I'm thinking, like, who am I going to pick? Like, it's almost like a mini NCAA basketball tournament going forward, which I think is a lot of fun. But there's always going to be people complaining. There's always going to be tweaks that need to be made. The obvious tweak to me is just, let's just reseed after every single round, but we'll see what happens going forward.
Give me an idea. Those first-round playoff games, Clemson, Texas, Tennessee, Ohio State, SMU, Penn State, Indiana, Notre Dame. To me, if I could be at one of those games, it would be Indiana, Notre Dame, and South Bend. That the ticket is going to be like they're saying Taylor Swift-like demand right now, as Notre Dame is saying that it's already sold out, and the fans in Indiana who have for a long time had a complex, the Indiana football fan has a little brother complex against Notre Dame that is insane. So this would be the equivalent, Indiana, Notre Dame. It would be kind of the equivalent of Oregon and Oregon State playing in a first-round playoff game in the playoffs. And that's why I think the Indiana fans are so excited to see that because they feel like they've got a good team. I think Notre Dame is one of those teams that could win it. Which game would you want to be at if you could go to any of them?
Yeah, I think it is Notre Dame, Indiana, because that game is going to be in South Bend, like you said. I can just imagine probably a Friday night game there, just a lot of big atmosphere. I think that game is going to be off the hook for this one. So I'm with you. I think that's the game I would much really like to see out of all of them. The second one would be Ohio State, Tennessee, but I don't know what Ohio State's fans, their psyche is after losing to Michigan by, getting dominated in that game. Tennessee, they're very like Michigan. They want to out physical you. They have a great defensive line. We saw what Michigan did to Ohio State. like, I'm looking at the bracket, John. I'm trying to pick the upset. That's my upset, is Tennessee over Ohio State. I think that's going to happen. We're all talking about the Oregon-Ohio State rematch. I think Oregon's going to face Tennessee in the second round, and that's going to be a tough matchup because we saw what Penn State did to Oregon. Tennessee is very Penn State-like, so we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I think Notre Dame-Indiana, man, that one's going to be a lot of emotion in that one. I think Notre Dame gets it done. But give me Ohio State-Tennessee. I think that one's going to be fine as well.
John is in Tigard. John, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, so I guess it's three comments. So, A, I don't have a problem in the conference champions making it to the playoffs, but I wouldn't have given, Arizona jumps, right, from 16 to make it in, but there's no way in heck I would ever replace them just because they were a conference champion into, like, one of the top four. And I put that in the equivalent, albeit I'm a beeve, right, not a duck. But I remember when the OSU Beaver basketball team wins the Pac-12, right? Even though they had had a really yucky season. But they win the Pac-12. They make it to the NCAA tournament. And then after that, and they were like a medium seed, right? They weren't like high. They were a medium seed. And then
12. They
make
they
it
were
to,
12.
The, to the final
yeah.
eight.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So I think it'll change over time.
I agree.
It'll take some time. The only thing I'm happy about is that Alabama didn't make it because they didn't deserve to.
I think there's a lot of people looking at that. But Alabama ends up playing Michigan in the game, the ReliaQuest Bowl, that used to be called the Outback Bowl. I'm calling it the used-to-be bowl because Alabama used to be a playoff team, and Michigan used to be a playoff team, and that bowl game used to be called the Outback Bowl. Leave it here. Our big splash is coming up. We've got a great show ahead.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Big left tackle, who's a great pass protector.
Genty breaking a tackle with that stiff arm, takes a little stutter step, picks up a first down, cuts it back inside. Ashton Genty trying to turn on the gas, spinning into the end zone. My goodness!
Ashton Genty among the 2024 Heisman Trophy finalists. They are officially out. Boise State's Ashton Genty, Dylan Gabriel of Oregon, Travis Hunter of Colorado, Cam Ward of Miami. All four players, what do they have in common, Stephen?
Pac-12 players, John.
In one way or another, Boise State's future New World Pac-12 member, Cam Ward played at Washington State, Travis Hunter at Colorado, and Dylan Gabriel at Oregon, both from former Pac-12 schools. The finalists are out. I happen to think they do this award too early now because there's potentially four games left in the college football season. Should they not count towards the Heisman Trophy?
Well, is it a regular season award or is it a postseason? They should have a college football playoff, like player of the tournament award.
Then. But if you're saying this is the player of the year, I think the Heisman, like the bowl season, has lost some luster, right? It has. It's less important than it was before. It's less prestigious than it was before. The bowl games and the Heisman Trophy. So if I'm in the Heisman Trust, I'm the Downtown Athletic Club, I'm looking at this and I'm going, hey, the playoff's going to be great. Going to be playing games for till January 20th. Let's make this award presentation maybe the week after the national championship game. Therefore, if Travis Hunter's the winner, his regular season was so great that it superseded everything that everybody else did after. So be it. But it gives Ashton Genty, Dylan Gabriel, players that have carried their teams to the postseason, gives them a chance to shine a little bit. Gives us a bigger, you know, there's some more football to be played. So I would like to see them kind of push that into the next, let's extend this award. College football bowl season, the bowl matchups are out. Any bowl games jump out at you, Stephen? Will you pay attention to the bowl games? Is there interest in the bowl games?
Yes and no. Like, for me, I will, because I'll probably do some, like, college football bowl season pool or something.
Bingo. Yeah. Bingo.
Gambling.
Gambling's going to drive all the interest.
But that's it. That's it. Yeah. I mean, besides that, like, if I'm at home and it's winter break and there's nothing else on TV, yeah, sure, maybe I'll flip on a bowl game. But I'm not paying attention to, you know, who wins these type of bowl games.
I always roll my eyes at people who say the bowl season doesn't matter because ESPN owns the vast majority of these bowl games. They're not going anywhere. They're going to continue to be played. And there are problems with them because the playoff has taken away some shine. The luster is gone from the bowl season, and you've got the transfer portal officially open today. And so a lot of players on the move who might opt out of the bowl game, and that's a problem. But I think that could be solved a little bit. I think two things. One, you've got gambling interest in these games. Two, you got ESPN and the other TV partners going, uh-uh, we need the programming. What are we going to put on? What's ESPN putting on if they don't have bowl games? Are they putting on pickleball? I'm not watching pickleball. Roller derby? I'm not watching that, sitting around waiting for the holidays to come. No, we're watching football. And so I don't think they're going anywhere, but you can make them better by offering players incentives to play in games, NIL incentives. The Bulls have the money. They could get the players in. It could be a revenue share with the players, just like some of these college basketball tournaments where we see the players getting a check at the end of them. You give the players an incentive to play the game. Second thing you could do is you could say, okay, the portal's going to open on December 9th, and you're free to get in the portal, but we're going to incentivize you if you stay and play for your team. You're going to get a check if you finish. But if you'd like to transfer to your new team and you're done with your school, your quarter is ended, and it will end by the time these teams play these bowl games after about December 15th or so. So why not let the players play for their new team? Why not say, hey, we're going to let you, if you transfer to Colorado, Steven, you left, Washington State, you're going to Colorado, you can suit up if the coaches will allow you for your new team. It adds a little bit of luster to the game.
It does, but isn't that the problem, that we have to incentivize 18 to 21-year-old kids just to play college football?
Welcome.
I mean, it's so frustrating to me.
But the game, I think people who are saying they don't matter, I'm like, okay, let's see how much money's gambled on these games.
Exactly.
And let's watch.
They matter, I tell you what.
And the TV ratings will still be there. People are going to watch. Now, granted, it's the ReliaQuest Bowl with Michigan and Alabama in it. It's not a college football playoff game, but I'm still going to watch it. And I'm going to watch Colorado BYU. See who wins that game. And, you know, is Travis Hunter really going to play? Like Coach Prime saying he is, and Shador's going to play. Let's see it. Let's see what these games, let's see what happens with these things and these games. All right. Punch and Audio is coming up. Stick around.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles. Discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Early yesterday morning, as I mentioned in the last segment, I'm leaving Indianapolis on a Delta flight that goes through Minneapolis and stops off in Bismarck, North Dakota, as we had a emergency type landing, and they switched planes out because of some smoke and an electrical problem on the plane. We got back in late. But by the way, on my outbound flight, though, I met a gentleman on the plane who's a diehard Oregon Duck fan. Nathan Reed is his name. And we talked about, you know, he's going to Indianapolis. He's going to see the game. He's been to every game this season. He happened to be on both legs of my flight. We had the same itinerary both ways, which is not that unusual because we're just going out on a Friday, coming back on a Sunday. Nathan Reed is joining us now, who spent 6 hours with me in the Bismarck Airport. Wait. How would you describe the Bismarck Airport if you were telling it to people?
Didn't think that there were airports smaller than Eugene, but I was surprised. Four total gates, the line out the door to get those $12 voucher for meals, it was pretty amazing. So at least their Wi-Fi was good. We were able to watch the ESPN broadcast and see all the Alabama fans cry about not making the playoffs, and it was wonderful. So
you're a diehard Duck fan, and you know what's funny is I thought when we got up to the, you know, I got in line, I got my voucher, I got up to the counter, I asked the lady, I said, you know, I said, I bet this is a busy day, and she says it happens once in a while. The plane will stop off here, just have to stop because, you know, there's not many stops between here and there, and one of them is Bismarck. And I said to her, I said, I wonder if they do it on purpose. Maybe it's a sabotage thing to help the tourism in North Dakota. I don't know. Give me an idea.
For
you,
sure.
As a Duck fan, you see the bracket come out. What's your reaction when you saw the bracket? You were shaking your head. I saw you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone was kind of predicting that Tennessee-Ohio State matchup. So as Lanning kind of said yesterday, we're going to get everyone's best shot. So no one will be able to say, oh, well, Oregon didn't deserve it if they won the national championship. Being able to play in the Rose Bowl, that's a historic location. I mean, if you haven't been to that game yet, you have to go. And being able to play potentially Texas in Texas and then Georgia in Georgia, it's going to make up for a crazy next 4 to 5 weeks. I mean, there's nothing like it.
Nathan Reed is our guest. He is a diehard Oregon Duck fan, and you know this because he's seen every game this season, home or away. How long have you been doing this? How long have you been traveling with the team? How many consecutive games are you on if we want to stretch this back?
Really, it's actually been this season so far. So okay. The reason I decided for this year is primarily because my dad, who is a big Oregon Duck fan, he passed away earlier this year in March, and I thought it'd be a great way to honor him. So in the past, he'd always remind me to take advantage of every opportunity to catch these most recent Oregon teams play because, you know, we don't really know what this kind of level of success will be and how long it'll last. So really, you need to enjoy it while you can, enjoy it while you're young, and if you have the opportunity, make those trips to the Midwest. So it's interesting for sure.
You're seeing some new places, and so give us an idea. The Big House in Michigan, seeing Camp Randall Stadium in Wisconsin, going to the Purdue game. You've been on the road a few places. You know, what have those experiences been like?
Yeah, I mean, I had a blast at all those games, but really Purdue is the one game that really shocked me. I think they're like one in five at the time, and it was on a Friday night, and they still had over 57,000 fans show up to a stadium that holds just over 60,000. You know, that kind of dedication to a fan base, really, when they're not doing that well, it was amazing to see. And it really gave me the first big show off the culture of the Big Ten's marching band, you know, and they really put on a show. So if you happen to make the decision to go out to that game in the future, check out, like, Purdue's website. We were able to get, my friend John and I were able to get parking tickets, and we parked on the golf course. We made it for a nice 10 to 15 minute walk, got to walk past the baseball stadium, the softball stadium, and they allow tailgating. It was great. So
give us an idea, because, you know, one other fan who was on the plane, I don't know if he was sitting with you or not, but yeah, I said, you guys are made for each other, but he had talked about going to all the games and he had all these travel tips. And I, you know, how are you buying your tickets to the regular season games? How are you finding a hotel? Do you have any insight that you learned in the course of this season, kind of doing that as a fan?
Yeah, no, there's tons of little tips and tricks I've had, you know, checking out both locations, either Eugene or Portland, and seeing which one's cheaper. It seems really basic, but for the Camp Randall game, it's actually cheaper for me to fly from Eugene to Salt Lake and then into Madison, Wisconsin directly than having a layover from Portland to Milwaukee or Chicago and then having to drive. And then the biggest thing is really just checking what section the away tickets are.
Yeah.
So for Purdue, I got lucky. Purdue returned some tickets. So the Duck Athletic Fund, they called up, and they were able to offer my buddy and I tickets on the 50-yard line for an extra $20. But then for the Camp Randall game, they put us way up in the corner. So luckily, knowing that ahead of time, about an hour before the game, I was able to get some tickets on SeatGeek on the 50-yard line for only $100. So really just scouting out ahead of time, figuring out where the away section is. And the biggest thing that I could tell is Duck fans travel. There are so many Duck fans in the Midwest from Chicago, and they always will try and sit behind the Duck sideline. So if you don't know where to sit, step on the Duck sideline. There will always be Duck fans around you, and it's a really safe bet.
Yeah, you mentioned trading your tickets for that Wisconsin game, and I had questions about that. I was like, how do you trade your tickets? So did you just take your tickets and list them on SeatGeek, and then you bought the tickets that were the 50-yard line seats, and then you sold yours? Is that how you did it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I sold mine the day before. You know, I took a little bit of a loss on it, but being able to see what the ticket prices were and how they dropped so much, I was like, all right, if I wait an hour or two before the game, there will be some awesome ones that pop up. In fact, that's what I did for the Big Ten championship game too. You know, I was able to get tickets around the 50-yard line for, I think, just over $150 about an hour before kickoff. So
Nathan Reed is our guest. The playoff games, how will you do that? I know Oregon has sent out to some of their season ticket holders the option to buy Rose Bowl tickets, to buy Cotton Bowl tickets. You can even select the option to get the playoff game. What has that experience been like? Are you buying them through the school?
Yeah, I'm going to buy all of them through the school, just with the risk of having to play Texas at Texas and Georgia in Atlanta. You really, those are games I would not risk waiting till the last second, because those ticket prices are going to be so expensive. And the early pricing information that the university has dropped for those games, it's a no-brainer. I think the most expensive ticket is like the national championship game, where it can get up to like $600 or $700, which for a game in Atlanta against potentially Georgia, that will be cheap. So I would definitely, if you have the opportunity to buy them from the university, I would. So
visiting fans, one of the other gentlemen who does this, who's gone to every game, told me, you know, a couple of years ago, he's in Atlanta to see Oregon and Georgia, and he says the Georgia fans took him out to dinner. They were just so welcoming. What have you gathered about Big Ten fans as you've traveled this season?
The biggest thing is it really has shown that it was really important for Oregon to be good in the 2010s. And with Chip Kelly and everything, because there's so many Oregon Duck fans I've met in the Midwest, whether they're at Wisconsin and they were already Oregon Duck fans, and they happen to go to Wisconsin, just building the culture in the Midwest has been really important. But, you know, every single person I've talked to has been super grateful. The biggest thing that I've heard is thanks for beating Ohio State. So the amount of Michigan fans that I talked to that just came up to us and just thanked us. It just really shows what that kind of culture is. Hadn't really had any nasty comments or anything. Everyone was really nice. And it's just, it makes for an exciting atmosphere when you're playing teams for the first time in their stadium.
Nathan Reed is our guest, Oregon fan. He happened to be on that flight yesterday that got delayed or derailed and, had to land in Bismarck. I got to talking with him and thought, you know what, this would be a really interesting segment. I do think it's enlightening. And, you know, you were on the Friday flight outbound, as I recall. You know, it's not like you have to quit your job to do this, but can you give us an idea, like, what line of work you're in? And because I can hear the listeners going, well, I can't get away.
Yeah. Luckily, my wife and I started a social media marketing business back in about 2016. Our primary clients are Amazon. So our company really blew up with COVID and everyone buying everything on Amazon. And fortunately for us, I've had the opportunity to be able to go to some of these games. And it's just been so amazing. So finding hotels with good internet connection, that's definitely a big tip as well. So.
Yeah, because you've got work to do. Tell us about your dad a little bit, because you're honoring your father through all of this. Tell us about dad.
Yeah, definitely grew up in a family where we weren't able to go to a whole lot of Duck games. So I grew up in Albany. Everyone asks why I'm a Duck fan, not an Oregon State fan. But, you know, being able to have him take those opportunities to take me to games like Arizona State when I was younger, or my grandpa taking me to the Washington game when I was younger. Those are just core memories, whether or not Oregon won or not, because I knew that they didn't happen all the time. So when he retired, my wife and I got us season tickets, and we have a third season ticket that we bought for him. And we ended up keeping it this year, just in honor of him. So,
what'd your dad do for work?
He worked for the Albany School District. He delivered meals to from the high schools, from West Albany and South Albany, to the elementary schools. So blue collar work, and then also worked at Ormet doing titanium stuff here in Albany. So real down to earth, everyone's friend. So
what was dad's name?
Richard Reed.
Richard Reed. All right. So I'm sure people listening in Salem and Albany, of course, are going to remember Richard Reed. But what a cool way to honor your dad and keep it, you know, keep this thing going. You'll be at the Rose Bowl. Hopefully you'll advance to the Cotton Bowl and the national championship game as well. Will you continue this into next season, or was this just kind of a this season, want to do this, and you'll pick and choose going on?
I really think I'm going to try. As long as my wife lets me do this, I'll continue to do this. There's some really great trips coming out next year. I mean, let me pull it up here.
Penn State in September.
Penn State and Iowa and the Wave to the Children's Hospital. And then making the trip out to New York City for the Rutgers game will be cool. But really, it's like you don't know where Northwestern's going to play. Are they going to play at Cubs Stadium again? I mean, that's a historic site. So, I'm going to try and continue to do this as long as I can, as long as I'm granted the ability to. So,
all right, Nathan, it was good meeting you, man, spending a little time with you in the airport and getting to know you a little bit. And I appreciate you coming on the show to share your expertise. Now, I will see you. I'll see you in Pasadena, and perhaps I'll see at the Cotton Bowl and beyond. So say hi if you see me.
For sure. Thanks again, John, and go Ducks.
All right. You take care. There he goes. Nathan Reed. I met him and about 199 other nice people yesterday in Bismarck. And granted, just about everybody in the airport was at one point I looked around. I'm like, we're all them. We're the people who it's like Lost. It really is. Good stuff there. Steven, do you get there were several of these guys. And by the way, traveling alone. There were three or four of these guys that were just going, hey, I'm going to the game alone. Would you go to a movie alone? Would you go to a football game alone? Have you ever done that?
I cannot say that I've ever done that. I would definitely go by myself. I would rather go with, obviously, Coach Vaughn. But, yeah, I would go by myself. I think if I was a big enough fan, I do think it would be a different atmosphere because you really can just let loose. And really, it would entice you to talk to other fans, whether it's your own fan base or the other fan base. And I think that's that would be a lot of fun.
I know that I went to a movie alone one time. I've been to a couple movies alone, but one time in particular, it was an NBA Finals, and San Antonio Spurs were in the finals. I don't remember what year it was. I think it was 2004, and the movie Saw came out. Horror film, and I was an off day in the series. I'm in San Antonio. There's nothing to do. I was done with work, and I was like, I'm gonna go see a movie. What's playing? And the movie Saw is playing. So I go into this movie, and I'm the only person in the theater, and I'm sitting in the movie theater, and then the movie's just about to start, and another guy comes into the theater, Grant Hill. Grant Hill and I sat with a couple seats between us. We're the only two people in the theater. We watched Saw in 2004, and then we awkwardly got up and left. It was quite an experience seeing Saw alongside Grant Hill. I'm sure he doesn't remember it, but I do. Remember every minute of that movie. It was horrific. And I couldn't, it's not like I could get up and leave. He'd be like, where are you going? leave him alone.
We're in this together, man. Come on.
In the theater. Go see a movie by yourself. I know a lot of people who do it. I'm not knocking it. And by the way, I always talk about movies that are out, you know. There's a movie out right now called The Greatest Christmas Pageant Ever. And it's a movie you can take your kids to. Steven, I would recommend you take your kids to go see this movie. I rate it a 91 on my scale of 1 to 100.
Mm.
It's worth seeing. It's a Christmas movie. Take the family. You feel good when you leave it. I'm just going to leave it at that. You want a feel good movie? And, you know, give you a lot of, gotta give you a lot of meaning. And it's got some laughs in it, but it's very much kid friendly. I think it's rated, PG. There's nothing bad about it, but, highly rated movie. Best Christmas pageant ever. All right, check it out. We got much more ahead on the BFT, plus the 5 at 5 coming up top of the hour.
I was running until I wasn't. My hospital stay would have cost nearly $48,000, even with insurance. But with VA, I'll pay zero. And VA is the best, most affordable healthcare in America for veterans like me. Knowing that my family is waiting at home and a surprise medical bill isn't, that's good for my heart. My service was then, my benefits are now. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
So, you know, one of the topics of conversation as I was sitting around the Bismarck Airport yesterday for 6-7 hours, whatever it was this assassination of the United Healthcare CEO, and a lot of speculation about who done it. They have made an arrest, not for the killing, but on other charges of someone that they believe is a person of interest and maybe a suspect in the killing of United Healthcare CEO. Police have arrested Luigi Mangione, 26 years old. He was spotted at McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Born and raised in Maryland, has ties to San Francisco. His last known address is in Honolulu. He is an Ivy League grad who was valedictorian of his high school. He had some cash. He had fake ID. He had some weapons with him. He fit the description. He had a box of masks. And there apparently was a lot of help nationally. I think law enforcement's biggest, smartest move in this was putting out kind of the APB to everybody. Hey, we'll just crowdsource this one because we don't have a strong lead. And somebody in a McDonald's picked up the phone and called 911 and said, hey, there's a guy here. He did not provide his real name and birth date originally. Police said he began shaking when they asked him, have you been in New York recently? That's not a crime. But in his backpack, they found a 3D printed pistol, 3D printed black silencer. And they had 6 9-millimeter rounds and a hollow point round, a 9-millimeter hollow point round in there as well. My original reaction when I saw all this was it was so CIA-like and so business-like, like what we saw in, you know, of his, you know, of him lying in wait and then firing the shots. And then for people who haven't seen it, the video of him, he jumps on this bike, he takes the electric bike very casually, very calmly into Central Park, ditches his backpack and the bike, vaporizes, vanishes into thin air. Police immediately say they think he's gone. He may have taken a bus. He may have taken a hot air balloon. Who knows how he got away? But I thought this was going to be a DB Cooper situation. It to me felt like a hit. Felt like it was not a personal thing. Police are saying that the suspect that they have arrested and they have charged with forgery and false identification, by the way, and they have not charged him with the murder. They are saying that he had some anti-healthcare rants and a manifesto that was with him. So, and he does sort of fit the description. What did you make of all of it, Stephen? Because for me, I thought when I saw it, I said, you know what? That doesn't look like somebody who's angry. That looks like somebody who was hired.
Yeah, it seemed like definitely pre-orchestrated, and this was out. This was something wanted. Somebody wanted this done, and you know, they got this guy to do it. But yeah, it's an interesting case because you see people like you want to grieve and you want to, you know, you don't want to be disrespectful to people and, you know, that die. But then people are like, well, healthcare is not great. Like, no, we don't love it. And so he's not the greatest of people. So it's just one of those situations where we always, I don't know, man. It's a hard situation for sure. But it doesn't seem like it was just something out of the ordinary. It's just,
well, what'd you make? Because, like, there was a lot of people saying he deserved it. He makes $10 million. He's the head of a insurance company that denies one out of every three claims. A lot of frustration with insurance and people sort of taking it out in that way. I didn't go there because I was like, that's a person, and I don't care if you're mad at healthcare. Be mad at healthcare. You know, follow the, like, you know, you didn't deserve to die. But there were a lot of people out there going, this guy's a hero.
I wouldn't call him a hero. That's not on my list of what I would call him. Yeah.
Would you have turned him in?
Yeah, I would have.
I wonder if everybody would have turned him in. I wonder if that person who called in, like, they're not identifying the person who reported him.
Well, apparently because, it was a McDonald's worker.
Yeah, well, it was somebody who was there who went, hey, we got to call 911. We should get somebody to get another look at this. But I think, I think there's a lot of people that wouldn't have turned him in, that would have sort of seen him as a vigilante and said, you know what, shouldn't have done that, but I don't know. Because he wasn't presenting as a danger to society, but I can tell you, I bet you there's a lot of CEOs out there that were suddenly going, I need private security. I shouldn't be walking around in public. You know, if you're the CEO of a cigarette manufacturer, if you're the CEO of another healthcare company, if you're the, you know, CEO of, you know, Smith & Wesson or whatever, one of the gun companies, Big Pharma, you know, you're probably walking around a little less confident about being in public. I'm just saying. But, if this is the guy, he's 26 and was a valedictorian of his school, and Associated Press saying that found they believe with the gun that was used in last Wednesday's shooting, and along with some writings that suggest that he is not happy with corporate America. Luigi Mangione, 26 years old, arrested in Altoona. He was in Altoona. I was in Bismarck. What if I would have saw him in Bismarck?
Now that would you—that's the thing. Would you have turned him in?
I would have asked some questions. my thing is, I would have turned him in if it's a crime. But I also think, like, I would hate to falsely accuse somebody, and my first impulse would be like to be really sure, because I wouldn't want to be like that. I think that's the guy, and call 911 and have them be like, no, that's not the guy. That's just another 26-year-old person. I don't know. The 5 at 5's coming up. By the way, somebody asked me my review rating for Saw, which I saw with Grant Hill, because I gave my my other movie a rating. Saw got a 44 on my 1 to 100 scale. Not good. Not a great movie. Stay away from it. Leave it here. Hey, John Kinzon.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
We got the 5 at 5 coming up. They've made an arrest related to the killing of the United Healthcare CEO, 26-year-old. Got some callers who want to talk about it. I'll take one call. Never go into the 5 at 5. Sean and Sandy. Sean, what do you got?
Hey, John. We can't wait till we're totally sure to make a decision like that. If you ever see something, you say something. Hear something, you say something. Especially, like, if you got any suspicion on anything weird, or, you know, and your community, anything like that, don't be afraid ever to say something, because the police will figure it out.
Well, yeah, but all I had to go on is that one little picture of half of his face. Like, you know, I've seen that guy a million times in the last year.
Yeah, well, this guy, obviously the guy at McDonald's was pretty quick on that.
Yeah,
be thankful. I'm thankful he was, because that's terrible. Nobody should. I don't care who anybody is. You know, you're just a guy doing your job out there, and a guy gets shot in the back. Right. Just randomly assassinated like that. That's a terrible thing. That's a terrible thing. I felt so bad for his family.
Well, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people on social media who don't. I noted that, and I thought, gosh, that's kind of strange to me that people. But the takeaway was people are mad at healthcare.
Well, I understand that. There's a lot of frustrations at a lot of different levels in leadership.
Yep.
But we still don't go that route, John.
Appreciate you. Thank you, Sean and Sandy. Enough about that. Let's get to the 5 at 5.
The 5 at 5.
See something, say something. Moving on.
Number one.
It's our big story, Stephen.
Well, the big story is, John, the Heisman Trophy. The finalists have been revealed, and they saw enough to put 4 players as Heisman Trophy finalists. Travis Hunter, the DB and wide receiver from Colorado. Dylan Gabriel, the Oregon Ducks QB. Ashton Jeanty, running back from Boise State. And Cam Ward, quarterback from Miami. They will all be in New York fighting it out for the Heisman now. John, 7 of the last 8 Heisman finalists have been from the Pac-12, and the last 3 winners have been from a Pac-12 school. Now, we're counting Ashton Jeanty as a Pac-12er because he's a future Pac-12er, but past, present, and future Pac-12 people. 7 of the last 8 Heisman finalists, the only one not from the Pac-12 was Marvin Harrison Jr. Of course, Travis Hunter, the big-time favorite in this year's Heisman Trophy finalist.
Did you know only 14 of the 89 Heisman winners have come from the West? 8 of those 14 were from USC, which means only 6 Heisman winners out of 89 are from the West and did not attend USC. Can you name any of them?
Marcus Mariota.
True. That's one. How about Oregon State?
Yeah.
Terry Baker. 2.
Let's see. Has Washington won a Heisman Trophy winner?
No. The other schools are BYU, Colorado, Stanford, and UCLA. Gary Bieben from UCLA. Jim Plunkett from Stanford.
Mm.
Ty Detmer, BYU. Rashawn Salaam, Colorado.
You know, I was going to say Rashawn Salaam, but I can't remember if he won Heisman. That was the only one that I knew.
A lot of bias to the Eastern Seaboard. And yet, look at the finalists this year. They're all West Coast guys, except Cam Ward at Miami, and Cam Ward played at Washington State. So it's Gabriel from Oregon, that's West. Hunter from Colorado is West. Jeanty from Boise State, it's West. Who's going to be third in the vote? Because it's going to go Hunter, Jeanty. Who's third, Gabriel or Ward?
I'm going Dylan Gabriel because they're the only undefeated team with the Ducks, and I think Cam Ward, with the 2 losses in Miami, he would have unbelievable stats, but too many losses for him.
I'm not supposed to say who I voted for. I cast my ballot yesterday from Bismarck, North Dakota. I did a lot of work in Bismarck. I cast my ballot. I can't say who I voted for, but I can say who I didn't vote for. Cam Ward of Miami was not on my ballot. And I didn't put the guy who Vegas would put on top on top. I'll just leave it at that. Does that help?
Yeah, I think I can figure it out at this point.
Could probably figure it out from those 2 clues. 1, Cam Ward's not among my top 3. 2, the guy that everybody says should win is not number 1 on my ballot. I put the best college football player on my ballot because that guy's still playing.
Number 2.
Well, another guy that maybe playing is Georgia quarterback Carson Beck, but he injured his right elbow in the SEC championship game against Texas. They're exploring treatment option with doctors. The university said in a statement today that there is no timetable for Carson Beck's return. In reserve was Gunnar Stockton, a sophomore. He came in, he went 12 of 16, 71 yards and a pick against the Longhorns. Georgia, of course, after beating Texas, is now the number 2 seed in the CFP. They're going to get that first round bye. They'll face off against the winner of the Notre Dame-Indiana game, and then they will play on New Year's Day, Georgia versus either Notre Dame or Indiana. But how big of a loss is it if Carson Beck can't be there for Georgia for this playoff run?
Yeah, it's a big one. And you say no timetable, but there is a timetable ticking in the background. As you know, Georgia's got to play a football game and then potentially a second football game as this playoff bracket unfolds. It's a benefit to Georgia that they're not playing a first round game, but January 1, they will be playing in a game against probably Notre Dame, I think. And then after that, they'll either get Penn State or Boise State. And, you know, Georgia's got a favorable bracket setup. But if they don't have a quarterback they have problems. And then the bigger thing is, you know, Carson Beck, I don't remember him getting hit like this. And I think there's a symptom here that nobody's talking about. And everybody's saying, oh, the injury, oh, the injury. I don't remember him getting touched. And he's, you know, that Texas game, he had defensive players all around him. I just wonder if maybe this is a symptom that George is not that great. Just saying.
Number three.
Juan Soto, the prize of the free agency in Major League Baseball. He reportedly, according to sources, is going to sign a 15-year, $765 million deal with the New York Mets, making it the largest deal in pro sports history. Now, the deal does include an opt-out after 5 years. It also has no deferred money. Remember, that was a big deal with Shohei Ohtani's contract. A lot of it was deferred money. Soto's has no deferred money. The contract also includes a $75 million signing bonus. And just to put this in perspective, John, Soto's going to make $314,815 per game. He will also, according to last year, if he had the same stats, he would have made $46,322 every time he swung the bat. $46,000 just to swing a bat for Juan Soto. Now, the Yankees did reportedly field a competitive offer. They offered $760 million, but it was over 16 years.
Outrageous.
Outrageous.
It's just outrageous.
Couldn't do it. And Soto also, think about that. Soto turned down a $760 million deal with the Yankees. When earlier, he had turned down a 15-year, $440 million deal with the Nats in 2022. So he has turned down just billions of dollars worth of contracts, and he ends up as the New York Met.
I just can't wait for little leaguers everywhere to be strutting around after taking a pitch in a little league baseball game.
Number four.
Well, remember the Pac-12 quarterback GOAT, Cam Rising? Well, there's a current expectation now that Cam Rising will not be back with Utah, but it is unclear at this point whether Rising plans to head to the NFL or apply for another medical hardship and then use that year of eligibility somewhere else. So he may be hitting the transfer portal. He may be going to the NFL, but the expectation is Cam Rising will not be back at Utah next year. Is that saying anything about Kyle Whittingham coming back?
It says they're moving in a new direction. They got a new offensive coordinator. He's going to bring his guy in. So I expect that's part of it. By the way, in the last 2 years, 24-25, 2,944 Division I players in the portal. 140 of them quarterbacks. 140.
Number five.
We got a banger of a Monday Night Football game tonight. Bengals, Cowboys in Arlington, Texas. I saw this stat according to ESPN's Seth Walder, who was a part of their analytical department, John. He sent out a tweet, said, chances of making the playoffs with a win tonight for the Cincinnati Bengals, 3%. For the Cowboys, if they win, chance to make playoffs, 2%. So big impact here in the NFL playoff race in this Monday Night Football game.
Well, we got Bengals and the Cowboys. Who do you got? Who you got?
Give me the Bengals. Hey, I can't go Cowboys. Come on now.
Bengals all day. I'm with you. All right, we're back tomorrow with another great show. Stephen Vaughn on the board and sidekicking today. Thank you, Stephen, for that. Judah Newby, phone screener, appreciate you as always. Appreciate that. Grab a podcast of this show wherever you get a podcast. I think you find it very lively. And if you're listening to the podcast, reach out and hit that subscribe button and make a commitment to us. It costs you nothing. We're back tomorrow with another great show. We've got some big guests coming down the pipeline. We'll get you all teed up for the college football playoff. There's some cool availability with some of these guests because the teams are not in day-to-day normal week flow. We'll be able to maybe get one or more of the Heisman finalists on the show. So stick around and lock it in the next couple of weeks. The Bald-Faced Truth, not here for a long time, just a good time.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.